Hello and welcome to the Feeder Series podcast. I am your host, Jim Kimberley, and today we are talking all about F2 and F1 Academy, who kicked off their season in Saudi Arabia, F2 obviously doing their second round, with four chaotic, crazy, non-stop, relentless races. And fortunately, I've got, again, Stephen Walton and Martin Lloyd, our F2 editors from Feeder Series, joining me. We've also got a podcast debut from Kala Krakowski, who's our F1 Academy editor, and a podcast debut, more excitingly than everybody, no offence to the other three, but Chloe Chong, who I have to say, thank you so much for joining us, Chloe, because I messaged you about half an hour before we started recording, thinking, you know what, maybe Chloe can come and join us, because I saw that you and a certain F1 Academy champion were watching the race, well, on your Instagram story. And, well, first, welcome to the podcast, Chloe. And how did you find the race? How did you enjoy last year? How's everything going from your side?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I know it was a bit last minute, but I saw the races and I was like, you know what, there's a lot to talk about. So it'd be fun to, I guess, talk about it some more with some more racing fans. So, yeah, I mean, right now I'm doing great. We started pre-season testing.
This is for British F4.
Yes, for British F4. And it's going really, really well. So excited to kick the season off. But also it's great to see F1 Academy starting up again and seeing them all race. You know, some close friends there racing. It does feel a bit like, you know, you want to be there, but you're not. But it's great to see it on the TV live and to I guess, watch, you know, my friends do quite well. So yeah, I think it's been a strong weekend from all of them.
I love how you say my friend's doing well. That's one of those things I think in F1 Academy, there's a lot of camaraderie there that's not necessarily seen in the higher ranks. Everybody seems quite friendly. And let's just go through this Instagram story briefly, because you were sharing on that on your Instagram that you were watching it with a close friend. Can you give us a little bit more detail?
Yeah, so Marta came over to stay for a couple of days just now. And yeah, we watched the races together. Marta's quite vocal, so if something happens, which a lot happened in the race, she gets quite vocal. So it was the neighbours probably weren't that happy, to be honest.
We are talking about Martin Garcia, the F1 Academy 2023 champion, of course, who is going to be into Freca this year. And Kala, this year we've got Freca driver coming in. We've also got other drivers coming from everywhere. Let's not go and focus just on one with Maya coming in. But this was a hell of a start to the season. Saudi Arabia isn't the easiest of tracks. And especially in race two, it did seem that F1 Academy was finding a little bit of difficulty, a little bit of teething problems, a little bit of, well, drama nonstop. How did you find your first weekend covering F1 Academy for Feeder Series?
Yeah, it was very exciting, a little bit chaotic. I would definitely say for both myself and some of the drivers, there was a bit of a learning curve, which makes sense, especially on the track that it's at. But yeah, pretty exciting. I was very thrilled to be covering it. It's my first weekend covering any racing series. So I don't know, I found it all quite exciting.
Yeah, well, I have to sympathize with you. There was a lot to go. I mean, anything that could happen in an F4 race, I felt did happen in an F4 race. There was safety cars, two checkered flags, red flags after the race, crashes, carnage. It was just bonkers to watch. Were you able to keep up on everything that happened? And I know we're going to talk about F2 as well, of course. It was trying its best to go at that same sort of pace, but were you able to keep up to date with everything that was happening? Because I seem to have lost my mind trying to remember everything that happened, because it was non-stop racing, especially race two.
Yeah, I think so. I had a lot of tabs open, various spreadsheets. I'm keeping track of things for myself on my own Google Sheets. So you know, when the penalties were coming out, I was trying to figure out, you know, the reclassification, so I could get ahead on figuring out what happened. You know, and some, the Dorian Pin penalty, for example, took quite a while. So there was a lot of waiting to figure out where the dust had settled. But I think let me just
touch on that briefly, because of course what we're talking about here is the second checkered flag when Dorian went around the circuit at full pace for a lap afterwards, which has left us in this really unusual situation where she is now third place in the championship despite crossing the finish line first in both races and getting two pole positions, which is a little bit crazy. Chloe, while we've got you here, how much do you get into the zone when you're racing around the track? Because the talk was that Prema didn't let her know that the checkered flag had finished. The checkered flag wasn't really fully unfurled when they waved it. Is this the sort of thing that was a teething problem for somebody coming over from endurance racing, or is this a technical problem? How would you interpret it?
Okay, so I think there's many ways that you can interpret it. From what I saw on the TV and from what I saw from the onboard of her fastest lap, you know, you couldn't really see the checkered flag. It was really hard because I was hidden behind a light board. So when you're going past it at that pace, especially so low down, unless you're seeing it visibly, it's very, very hard. And I think for Dorian, especially when she was told the lap before, you know, go push for the fastest lap, she probably thought there was still, you know, some time left in the race. And afterwards, there was some communication issues with the team. I think she asked, you know, is this... when is the race over? And she didn't get a reply. It could be, you know, due to issues with the radio communication on the circuit, etc. But I think one thing that we have to remember is that the radios in this championship are actually optional. Like, you don't have to use them. It's kind of like, it's not like necessary that you use them. So as a driver, you're meant to be responsible for, you know, being aware of your surroundings and everything. So I think, you know, I sympathise with Dorian for having, you know, those difficulties with not seeing the checkered flag, not getting the radio communication. Like, for me, transferring to British F4, we're meant to get radios this year, but our team doesn't have them yet. And I've had so much trouble, you know, trying to figure out where the pit board is, especially at Silverstone, where, you know, you're at the braking point. You have to look over to the pit board while you're going past the braking point. So I know it's so, so difficult. But also as a driver, you've got to remember that it's your responsibility to, you know, look in your mirrors, look at your surroundings and kind of process what's going on. So I think it's a difficult one from that perspective. But on the FIA side, you know, the regulations say that she must have a penalty. So it's good to see that they're, you know, doing what they're saying. I feel bad for Dorian that she's lost, you know, a win that she truly deserves. But I'm sure that it'll make her learn in the future and it'll make her a better driver, you know, out of it.
You're very, very eloquent there, Chloe. I enjoyed everything you had to say there. And I can't imagine how difficult... I mean, I can't pick up a braking marker myself, let alone look at a braking marker and look at a pit wall to try and read something. Just thinking we have F1 Academy, though, no Stephen Martin waiting very patiently for the F2. And there's a little bit to talk about there as well. But I just want to make the most of having Chloe joining us. And let me just go to you briefly, Calla, as well. That we have now the championship leaders of Abby Pulling, Maya Weg, and Dorian Pan, who are the top three, and they seem to be almost in a league of their own at the front of the championship as well. Are you expecting these three to be the ones that we're going to see fighting for the title at the other six rounds?
That definitely seems likely. I think we're in an interesting situation, the same situation as Formula One, actually, where the first race is where the drivers did substantial testing before the weekend. So they definitely got a lot of practice on this specific circuit, although for most, if not all of them, that probably would have been the first time they'd ever driven around that circuit otherwise. So I think that will definitely impact how the first races end up. We also have a lot of very talented rookies, and Pin and Vogue are both new to the series, but you know, we have Leah Block, who's a lot younger and was at points in this weekend looking like, and was running in the points. And then I was also impressed by another Chloe Chambers, who also looked strong with I think, like less experience than Pin Pulling and Vogue. So I think there's definitely some people that we will see coming up and challenging from below in the standings at the moment, but it does seem that those three, but particularly Pin and Pulling, are pulling ahead, so to speak.
Oh, somebody had to do it, and Calla went for it. I love that. It's going to be the pun that keeps on giving all year, I think. Chloe, just talk about Chloe Chambers and Strong. She's very strong into the back of Lola's car, sadly, at turn one. And
And then Lola was strong into the side of Leah's.
Yeah, that was the epitome of a T-boning sort of incident. And Leah, you're correct, seemed to be doing pretty well for essentially coming into a completely different racing category. I mean, the curbs bounced her off quite harshly on race one, but then she seemed to be running pretty well apart from the repeat penalties. It was one of those races that snowballed. It was like the incident, and then there was the penalty, then another penalty, then speed. It just seemed to get worse and worse for her. But Chloe, the panic you have when you're in an incident, which Lola was sideways across the track at turn one, and then she pulled out and Leah unfortunately hit her. What's it like when I've done, you know, the PlayStation games and iRacing and things like this, and you do want to just go, oh no, Span, let me just get back there, or, you know, press the replay button. That's not the case in real life. What's it like when you're in that situation? Can you blame her for having that problem?
So from what I saw from the incident, I think it was both like quite unfortunate on both sides. In my opinion, I don't think that Lola should have pulled out when she did, when she knew there was loads of cars coming behind her. But obviously when you're in that situation, you know, you've got the adrenaline pumping through your veins and you're like, damn, like just lost a place, you know, I've been spun out. I think you could be thinking of a lot of things. And I think probably the most important for Lola was to get back on track, especially with the clutch that we have, which is quite a stiff foot clutch. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can like kind of like, you know, it's really hard to like feather it and kind of stop. And, you know, so when she started pulling out, she had to pull out. And I think that's what made it unfortunate. It's not like, oh, okay, Leah's right here. Like you can't stop really. But when you're coming off the clutch, it's very difficult. And then you have to go back on. And I think, you know, having that panic whilst in such a high intensity, high adrenaline race, you don't really think about all these other factors. But I think surely Lola's looking back on what happened and probably, you know, she's probably saying the same thing, you know, why did she do that? And she probably knows that it was, you know, a bit of a panic in the moment sort of thing. So I think, you know, she gets a penalty and I think we can move on from that, to be honest.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm hoping that it was one of those first race weekends, there's a lot of learning for everybody. And yeah, one of the things that I kind of learned, and Calla, I want to hear your take on this, and then we'll move on to the F2 side of things. The penalties came down, we mentioned for Leah Block, but the penalties didn't seem to come down so much for Bianca Bustamante, who had a different track, it looked like, especially at turn one. I can't remember seeing her go round turn one that many times. Were you finding it quite interesting that the stewarding decisions seem to range from quite harsh, which, I mean, Dorian's was kind of inevitable from precedent, but then we saw a five or ten place grid drop for the next race in the current race, which I've never seen before, but then you saw Bianca getting away with things.
Well, the 10 place one was for Lola, right?
Yeah.
That was for the collision with Block. So, I mean, what we did see, I think, with Bianca cutting that first corner, which a lot of drivers were doing, was in the first race, I think, that she struggled with that. And then in the second race, Chambers got a 5-second penalty mid-race, for doing the same thing, for leaving the track and gaining an advantage at that spot. So I think after the first race, maybe like 2 hours after, Levenfoss also got a penalty in that one. Off the top of my head, can't remember what for. And I was expecting,
if you could remember every penalty, I think that's like almost Rain Man levels of intelligence, because there were just nonstop penalties. The stewards are dishing them out nonstop. So I completely understand if you don't remember them all, but please continue.
No, yeah. I think maybe at that, I was thinking maybe there would be one for the black and white flag for track limits for Bustamante for that corner, but there wasn't. And that's how it goes. I don't think it was, I mean, you know, we saw it a couple times on what they showed on the TV, which is all I have access to. And I believe she got the black and white flag. And if the stewards didn't see anything else, that's probably all there was. But I think it appeared like maybe there was a larger discrepancy than there was. I also think it's the first time that F1 Academy has an audience quite this large. You know, it's being live streamed on both X and on YouTube. And the weekend is confusing me. On Saturday morning, when I checked to see how many people had watched the Friday race, it was something like the views that showed up was something like 250,000, which is
wow.
a lot. And that probably just shows, you know, every time somebody joins again, that's another count. But that's a lot of people watching. So I think there's also just a lot of eyes and a lot of, you know, uproar coming about any small thing that happens in the race compared to last year and then compared to any F4 series I can think of. So I think there's just a, I wouldn't say an inordinate amount of attention, but a much larger amount of attention than has ever been on the series.
Yeah, I did speak to Bianca briefly at Formula Winter Series, and she did say that the attention that those guys are getting compared to the other competitors because of the Formula One backing, because of the publicity they get in F1 Academy was sizable. Mike, now I'm going to come to you, but I just want to say goodbye, one, to Chloe. But one final thing, because we have got a sizable gap until the next race, which does lose momentum a little bit in F1 Academy. What was it like, Chloe? And then please feel free to leave. The gap you had, because you had quite an intense calendar at the start of your season, then you had this massive wait until COTA. What do you do in that gap? Because it was a couple of months, I think.
Well, actually, for me, I think it would have been, you know, much more useful for me to have those sorts of gaps between last year's races. I got called up to Prema quite late. So, one, I wasn't physically prepared, and two, I just had no testing. So, it was very, very difficult for me to kind of find my footing. You know, it was like one race, damn, like the next race is coming up next week. How am I going to prepare myself for that? You know, it can be a good thing because then you can kind of, you know, take all those things that you want to learn and implement it straight away. But on a physical side, you know, going to a track like Valencia or Zandvoort, it is so, so difficult to physically get up to that level that all the other drivers are at when you've had 2 weeks. Okay, like you're going to join Prema, you're going to do this test day and that's it. So for me, like between Paul Ricard and COTA, it was so much preparation. You know, I was like, okay, you know, I felt so bad this first half of the season. I was losing so much time just because I literally couldn't steer the steering wheel. And I was going to put everything into it. So it was like every day I'd wake up, go to the gym. We started renting a sim because loads of our like teammates, competitors, they were all saying that helped so much. And actually at the beginning of the year, Prema discouraged us from buying a sim because they said it wasn't, you know, going to help. They didn't want it to distract me from their team sim. But we finally decided during the summer break to invest and try renting one out. So we did that and it helped so, so much. Like just sim every day, training every day, you know, just little things like mindset, some stuff with Xavier at 3-2-1 perform for the psychological side. And all of that put together, you know, it just shows how strong my performance was in COTA, just that preparation. So I think for these drivers this year, like having these big gaps between the races means that they can thoroughly like reflect on how the race went, you know, how the crashes went, how they could have changed that. Maybe stuff was out of their control, but, you know, it's just about putting stuff into your mental bank and growing from it. So I think it's actually very, very helpful to have these gaps between races because it also means that they can have testing, they can train, they can work on stuff that they were weak on. And when they come back, you know, maybe we'll see a completely different driver. So I think it's very useful in a championship like this, especially so high profile, to give them time to develop, especially as young drivers.
Chloe, I can't thank you enough for coming on. The insight you've given with these answers is tremendous. I'm going to wish you well, and please come back on the podcast later this year. Thank you so much for joining us, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you guys for having me on. Yeah, it was a pleasure to speak, and hopefully I'll talk soon.
You absolutely will. Best of luck with the campaign. I'm going to come to you now, Martin, that you were going to say something.
Oh, wait,
there.
Could I,
yes, you can. Of course
could
you
I
can.
Jump in really quick? Yeah, I think there's definitely some of the drivers are racing in other series this year. So we'll see Abby Pulling racing with Chloe Chong at British F4, where Abby Pulling has experience in that series before. And I could definitely see her making, especially given her performance in this weekend, making a, you know, title challenge there. And then obviously Dorianne Pin is racing in the World Endurance Championship, which is, you know, another level, really. But then we also have drivers like Maya Voogd, who I think maybe some people expected to perform a bit higher than she did this weekend. But unlike, you know, Pin, who's been racing all winter, as far as I know, she really hasn't since Freca. So I think, you know, the space between races will definitely affect the championship standings. Yeah. How? I don't know yet, but I will definitely change some things.
Yeah, it's a really good point from Chloe. I thought about having a bit more time to prep. So it was something I hadn't really considered, which is the beauty of having drivers come and yeah. speak. But I also want to hear from non-drivers. So please, Martin, Stephen, jump in. You've been waiting so patiently. Thank you.
I was going to say, I thought that answer from Chloe was actually really insightful, because it's something that I guess I've been thinking about a lot with the F2 calendar this year, is it's almost broken up into like little mini seasons in a way. So like we've got Bahrain was last week, Saudi Arabia this week, and then in 2 weeks' time we go to Australia, and then we're basically off for about 5 or 6 weeks before we come back for Imola, I think it is. And we see that throughout the year. So it'll be interesting, to see if, you know, I guess so far we've seen drivers like, I think Kush Maini has been one of the stars in F2 in the first two races. Who else comes
Laren,
to
mind? Dennis
Hauger's been quite consistent as well. And it'll be interesting, I guess, using them as examples, you know, in the next block of races, whether they're still at the front or if others jump up. But that's just my two cents on that.
Oh, please, and Martin, I know you were trying to say something. I think I've made you wait about 20 minutes before you can get those first words in, so I do apologise.
That's all good. No, I just wanted to agree with Calla's point that she made a few minutes ago about the attention that's on F1 Academy. I think sometimes, scrolling social media yesterday afternoon and you see people talking about the incidents that happened, and of course there were some things that some of the drivers could have done better, but I think what we forget is that it is a Formula 4 series. These are largely inexperienced drivers, and there's a lot more attention on this particular F4 series than there is on, say, Spanish F4, Italian F4. It's not on the F1 support weekend and a really, really difficult track, streamed live to such a large audience. I think it's something that people have really got to remember sometimes, that these drivers are still inexperienced, and just because they're on the F1 support roster with F2 and F3, I think it's really important that people don't forget that this is an F4 series and these things are going to happen. And I think yesterday's race was maybe showcasing that a little bit, but obviously there was some moments of real quality as well. So I think it's important that we sometimes take a step back and realise it is not maybe the same level of racing always as some of the other championships we cover, because these drivers are less experienced. I think that's a really important point.
Can I now show my true professionalism and segue this into F2, Martin, by saying it wasn't just F1 Academy that was struggling, the drivers out there, because Formula 2 was full of yellow flags, safety cars, incidents, stalls, again, almost everything that was in the F4 race. Now, you, Martin and Stephen, had to cover this, and I mean, I've watched 5 races this weekend and my brain is a little bit frazzled. So, Martin, you mentioned the experience, or the inexperience of the F1 Academy, but the F2 relatively experienced drivers, some of them racing there for the second year, they didn't fare that much better either. So how did you view the F2 weekend?
Yeah, well, this is the next point I wanted to make, was that there's the inexperience in F1 Academy, and then the F2, there's Formula 2, which kind of, sometimes you think it doesn't have any rules. It was so unpredictable this weekend. You had 3 drivers stalling in the 2 races, including both Williams Academy drivers in the first race. You had Amaury Cordier coming in 5th place, which I think if you'd have told me that at the start of the weekend, I would be asking you if pigs fly. So it's a really good result for him, and it's also really interesting to show that F2 can still be unpredictable even with these new cars. And you have a photo finish for 3rd place. You have cautions bringing cautions, as they say, over an IndyCar. And I think it was a really interesting weekend that showed how F2 is still just a little bit mental.
Stephen, do you want to come on that point? Because at the moment we are going into the 3rd round, and let me just double check before I go and get this wrong. With the championship standing, Zane Maloney still reigning supreme. And I thought he had a pretty good weekend despite the qualifying problems. He really recovered, and so did Pepe Mai. But just before you go in, we've got Ollie Bearman, no points. Victor Martin,
Yeah, no where points. Was he this weekend? He was nowhere.
No, yeah. Useless, that guy. So we're facing a championship, which is very unpredictable, Stephen.
Yeah, very much so. I think I wouldn't have believed you if you had told me in preseason testing that by the end of the first two rounds, Victor Martins and Ollie Bearman would both be on 0 points. Obviously, Bearman for a bit of a different reason with being called up to F1.
He's got some points somewhere, but who cares?
Yeah, it's quite funny, isn't it, that he's now got more points in F1 than he does in F2. And yeah, he's got a better championship position in F1 than... Because I read somewhere, I haven't fully checked this, but apparently because Cordell scored points in Saudi Arabia, that Bearman is now officially last in the Formula 2 championship.
He is. He's got Roman Stanek ahead of him. He's got 13. Who got P13? Ollie Bearman's best finishing position is P15. So useless.
He'll never go anywhere.
It'll be interesting though, because we did expect Bearman and Martins to really be two of the main championship protagonists, and now they're both really on the back foot now. So it certainly opened some doors for people like Zane Maloney, who's still our championship leader. And even leaving this weekend, you know, Enzo Fittipaldi and Dennis Hauger have very much put their foot forward with throwing themselves in with some strong points. And, you know, you'd be a fool to write them off. You know, I thought Enzo Fittipaldi in particular, you know, I guess that the Van Amersfoort team is quite new to F2, and I think it's only their second win in Formula 2. But, you know, his pace was kind of next level in that feature race. He won, I think his winning margin was over 8 seconds in the end. So, you know, not just a win, a quite dominant win in the end for Enzo. So, you know, maybe a sign of things to come.
Martin, we saw Enzo doing extremely well, but we also saw Kushmany actually benefit this time from the... withdrawal, for want of a better word, for Ollie Bearman, and he ended up inheriting pole position points for not scoring pole position but starting on pole position. And then he was pretty strong. He didn't seem to have the pace on Fittipaldi, who seemed to be like Maloney levels last weekend of speed. But we've got, again, and no disrespect to any of these drivers, but I didn't expect to see Kushmany, Paul Aron, Pepe Marti, and his rookie season, Jack Crawford, fighting in these top positions, and they all are. Is this anything you expected?
I think it is unexpected to a degree, because you go into the season this year with the idea in your head, or in my head at least, I was thinking Victor Martins, Ollie Bearman, alongside Antonelli, and maybe Miata and Bortoleto. And I was thinking, are the returning drivers gonna be able to match these guys? That aren't Martins and Bearman. And I thought that they've really shown that they can this weekend and last weekend as well. I think there's been a common thread of a few drivers who've been really strong both in Saudi Arabia and in Bahrain. And we'll have to see if that plays out later in the season, in a couple of weeks in Australia and later on as well. But I think, like you were saying, Kushmany, Jack Crawford, Pepe Marti, obviously it wasn't the best weekend for him, but he still showed promise. And Zane Maloney, a difficult qualifying, but actually he brought himself back up in the races.
He was almost on the podium, Martin. I couldn't believe it.
He really was. Yeah, got up to P4 in the sprint race, which was just insane. So I think there's a lot of drivers who have shown good form in both weekends so far. I think there's also a lot more to come from people like Victor Martins. I can't believe that's ART's true form. I'm sure they'll figure out what's going wrong soon, because it's so unlike them, especially as the team's champions. You can see that Prema maybe not quite where they want to be yet, but they're definitely starting to get to grips with the new car.
Well, they were on pole, technically. Antonelli was impressive
this weekend. Well, exactly. And it was actually just the lack of the one car that meant that they didn't have as much of a chance of a win. So I think it's been a positive weekend for those guys. A bit of work for ART to do, but like I said, a common thread of a few drivers, mainly the experienced ones who are really, or the second year ones who are really running through and were strong both this weekend and last weekend.
I really enjoyed F2 this weekend. I enjoyed how we saw what we got. Hauger and Fittipaldi seemed to do what Zane did last time by both getting on the podium. Like, drivers sprinting ahead in the sprint. And again, unexpectedly, and we said Paul Aron, who's now got two podium finishes in Formula 2 already, and it looks like a win's inevitable. Stephen, let me come on to you with this. The championship order now is Maloney, Fittipaldi, Hauger, Aaron, Meini. Is this just an example of F2? And people have spoken about it. I think they spoke about it in commentary. This is the best F2 grid we've had for years. Is this what happens when you have that level of quality, that you have drivers that you don't expect being up in these positions?
It really has been a little bit surprising with the drivers that we've seen at the front. But I think what's always shone through in F2 is that the key to winning this championship and doing well is consistency and not necessarily always about coming first. And in some ways, I think it's sometimes more important about where the driver finishes when they're having not so good of a weekend and not so strong. And I think we saw that this weekend with Zane Maloney, where he really had an issue in qualifying, and we saw the engine cover coming off in qualifying. Clearly things weren't quite right, and he qualified down in 15, but he still got himself into the points in both the sprint and the feature, added to his tally, and he's retained the lead of the championship. And if every time that he's qualifying out of the top 10, if he's getting himself back into the points, then you know he'll go a long way in the championship. And we saw it last year with Teo Porcia, just the absolute epitome of how important being consistent is, because he only won that one race in Bahrain, yet he went on to win the championship because he just kept picking up points, picking up podiums, and kept himself at the front.
Let's move on to the worst driver in Formula 2 this year, the guy at the bottom, P22, 0 points, Ollie Bearman. I think it's worthwhile, because we are a Feeder Series podcast, and he did go and do some non-Feeder Series racing, but he's still our Feeder Series driver this year. They can't steal him just yet. I think it's only fair that we highlight what a mad weekend that Ollie had. I don't know, Calla, you're not an F2 reporter or editor, but you're very aware of what happened with Ollie making that step up. And let's go through all three of you, but let's start with you, Calla. How did you rate Ollie's unexpected debut in Formula One, with having 1 hour of practice in a car that he's never driven before, and then almost getting into Q3, and then finishing the Grand Prix in P7?
I mean, I don't think you can say anything other than that was fantastic. This weekend with the shifted days is so confusing to me, but I guess I woke up on Friday to that news being in America and was like, oh, whoa, was the reaction. I guess in the back of my mind, with no returning rookies in Formula One, I kind of expected something to happen, somebody to step up at some point, but not quite this soon, absolutely. So I think, you know, by his own desires, he maybe had an underwhelming qualifying session, although from the outside, absolutely not underwhelming. But, you know, he said, my own goal was to make it to Q3. But then I think getting P7 in the race was amazing with, you know, with Norris and Hamilton, the two drivers behind him who are both quite good drivers. And I think I was expecting maybe him to, you know, kind of fall off a bit toward the end of the race just because it's so long and so exhausting. But he didn't. He kept setting, the broadcast was saying he was setting his, you know, fastest laps of his race in the last few laps of the race. So yeah, I think pretty incredible.
Yeah, Stephen, is this an example of showing that the likes of Teo Porcher and maybe Felipe Drogovic are drivers that should probably have a chance in F1 as well, because we're seeing the quality of what an F2 driver can do in almost no practice?
Yeah, well, I thought, Ollie definitely represented F2 quite well. And I remember in the press conference on Friday, the drivers in the press conference, I think Paul Aaron in particular was sort of saying that, you know, we really hope Ollie does well because he's sort of representing our series. And I mean, Ollie just did not look out of place in F1. He stepped up. He didn't make, I think, more importantly than where he finished and everything, I think the most important thing is he didn't put the car in the wall. He didn't make any major mistakes. You know, the walls are so close in Saudi Arabia. And he kept kept it on the road and did finish in a really good spot in the end. But yeah, he definitely represented F2 very well.
Martin, let's finish with you on the Behrman point that he's got six, I believe, FP1 sessions with Haas, and now he's had an unexpected FP3 session and a qualifying and a race with Ferrari, which if you told me that a week ago, I told Ollie that a week ago, wow. Now, it seemed already that he probably had a seat or something lined up, depending on his F2 performance through 2024. But would you say it's almost guaranteed? Well, it is a guarantee at this point that, irrespective of those the F2 season, that he's going to be an F1 driver by 2025.
I can't believe he will not be on the F1 grid in 2025. I think not just with his performance this weekend. I think he was already on the radar. He impressed Haas a lot in Mexico and Abu Dhabi in his FP1 sessions that he's already done. But I think his performance this weekend really topped it off. And what I was, I'd say, most impressed with was something that Kala touched on earlier. Behrman wanted more from this weekend. He's got that mentality that actually, I'm in a Ferrari, seventh place is lower than where I want to be, even though it's his first weekend. He started the weekend getting pole position in Formula 2. He suddenly parachuted in and he nearly makes Q3 and gets 6 points. I think for him to be underwhelmed by that, as you say, I think shows how almost high level his mentality is, and he thinks he should be higher up the placings. And I think it's really important that he's got that mentality. And I think that will show to the F1 teams that he's the real deal. In terms of 2025, like I say, I can't believe that he won't have a seat. Whether that's with Haas or another team, I'm not sure yet. But I think, apart from anything else, he's shown to Ferrari that they're going to need to find him somewhere, otherwise someone else is going to pick him up.
What an interesting turn of events it all was. I know everybody got excited about 2025 already because of the silly season and certain seven-time champion who finishes behind an F2 driver ended up triggering things a bit worse than anybody expected and earlier. But now with Behrman in the mix as well, there's some F1 drivers who I think are really high quality who aren't going to be on the grid in 2025. I don't know who yet, but it's really going to change a lot of things with the this performance. Now, I just want to finish. Last time we had the hot takes, and this time I want to finish with what we've got on a YouTube poll that we have running. And I've asked for essentially what people's star Saudi driver was. And at the current time of recording, we've got Dorian Pan, 54% of the votes. Enzo Fittipaldi, 27%. Dennis Hauger, 11%. And someone else, 7%. Some of the comments we've got for that someone else, Ollie Behrman from the Bauman's, a very long name, I'm going to try and pronounce that, Cordial, JFran F1, special mention to Abby Pulling, Miney as well. So some comments here who are suggesting that other drivers are their star drivers. I'm going to put three of you on the spot from F1 Academy and F2, maybe F1. I don't know if you can classify Behrman as a feeder series driver this weekend. Carla, who would you say your top driver of the Saudi Arabian weekend is?
For me, it's Dorian Pin. And that's not even just F1 Academy. That's F2 as well. Between everything, I think she was my star driver. Unfortunate ending aside, she did absolutely everything right. She led the practice session. She led qualifying. Her two fastest laps were the two fastest laps, not just the fastest lap and second fastest lap. And she led every lap of both races. And she didn't have to deal with some of the chaos in the middle, but she did have to defend against three safety car restarts, which twice she did masterfully. And one time there was maybe a little bit of doubt that she would, maintain the position. So for me, she did everything right. But I mean, Pulling was amazing as well, because she really, put herself in the place to take advantage of anything that happened. And, ultimately outside of the race by no fault of Pulling's own, she, by putting herself in the right position and an exterior circumstance, she got a win. And her first win in F1 Academy, which should be mentioned, that eluded her last year. So, you know, she put herself in a great position, but Dorian Pin was just, you know.
Let me fill the words for you here.
Oh, go ahead.
Let me fill the words here, because TerraPog8533 on YouTube said that Dorian Pan really went the extra couple of miles this weekend, which is a very clever comment. A very, very clever comment. Let me ask the same question to you, Stephen, your top driver from the two championships.
Yeah, I agree with Kala that it was Dorian Pin was just, she was just dominant this weekend. You know, both race wins, pole position, lead pretty much, or lead every lap, is that right? I think.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing she missed was fastest lap of the first race.
Oh, why even bother? Dreadful. Yeah.
But for the sake of variety, I think if I had to pick a close runner-up, I'd actually go with Dennis Hauger. He in F2 this weekend, he finished second in the sprint race, but because the original winner, Richard Vishaw, was disqualified for technical infringement, he technically was the sprint race winner. And then he got himself on the podium with a brilliant move in the feature race, picked up strong points. Has definitely put himself into championship contention. I just think an all-round, a really strong weekend, and yeah, thought he drove very well.
Martin, final words of you. Who would your driver of the weekend be?
I was really hoping Stephen wasn't going to talk about Dennis Hauger. but I'm gonna say obviously Dorian Pan as well, because I think she's just had a masterful weekend. And I'd be surprised if she didn't pick up the F1 Academy Championship. But I do want to just elaborate a bit more on what Stephen said about Hauger, because I think there is a lot of pressure on him this year. He is a third-year driver in F2. He's not with the Driver Academy. He's got a very highly rated teammate in Franco Colapinto. And so there's a lot of pressure on Hauger to deliver, and it might be an F1 seat at the end of it if he can have a really good season. But he's also got to look at future options outside of F1. And I think this year is a really big year for Hauger for that reason, because there's only so long he's going to be able to spend in F2. He's already shown his quality multiple times in multiple championships, whether that be F2, F3 or other series he's competed in. And I think it's a really big weekend for him to get a double podium, including that sprint race win, to get third place on the last lap. I think it's been a really impressive weekend from Dennis Hauger. I think a shout out to Kush Meini, who also... like I said earlier, showed he's got a lot of pace this year. Enzo Fittipaldi as well, winning the feature race by that margin when he took the lead relatively late on and just dropping the rest of the field for dead was very, very impressive. But I think if you're talking the whole weekend, obviously Dorian Pan, but then I'd agree with Stephen, Dennis Hauger is not too far off.
I couldn't pick, and as a host, I don't have to pick. So well done, you guys, for doing it for me. But anybody who is watching on YouTube or even listening on Spotify, if you do want to leave a comment either on our socials or just below the video, please let us know who you thought the driver of the weekend was. It was a cracking weekend of feeder series racing, and we're going to have it all to do again with we've got Albert Park next in F2 and F3, and then we've got F1 Academy, Miami, just in a couple of months. But it's another street circuit, so another load of chaos potentially incoming. Can't wait to see both of them happening. But I'm going to say thank you to Kala, to Stephen, to Martin, and to Chloe for joining us earlier as well. Thank you for everybody who is watching and listening. And if you are watching on YouTube, dropping a like on the video, leaving a comment, and subscribing to the channel really helps us out. And if you're listening, leaving a review on the podcast platform you're listening on is greatly appreciated. Finally, check out feederseries.net for more Feeder Series insight, including a lot of content from our editors who are really, really turning up the wick and elevating Feeder Series to new heights. Thank you so much to everybody in the team for putting that content out there. Please have a read, because it's excellent quality content that we've got. And follow Feeder_Series and FS Americas on X and Feeder Series Net on Instagram. You can find the links to all of those, plus where to find everyone in this episode in the YouTube description or the podcast show notes. Until next time, we have been the Feeder Series Podcast. Goodbye.